Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
2022, what a year it has been for EB5.
Oh yes, Mona, from groundbreaking legislation to new procedures and more.
A lot more. All right, here we go. Month by month, January. When the year began, the minimum investment was $500,000, and it was the golden age of the direct pooled project.
Oh gosh, Mona, you know, that seemed like it was such a long time ago.
Yep. And Rebecca, many wondered if the regional center program, which had lapsed in June 2021, was ever going to be reauthorized, with industry EB5 folks speculating in blog pieces, podcasts like crazy.
And we even had a guest speaker on in January predicting what was going to happen.
That's right, Rebecca. Here's that clip from the episode New Year, New Agenda, What to Expect in 2022.
Should we wait for the regional center program to be reauthorized, or should we do something else?
We are talking to our clients about what is definitely possible versus what we don't know about in the future. It is definitely possible to do a direct EB-5 now. There are direct EB-5 pooled projects that do appear to be approvable. It doesn't have to be a pooled project. It can be in your own business. So we are fine with people doing direct EB-5s right now, as opposed to waiting for the possibility of the program, of the regional center program, being reauthorized.
Right.
And also understanding that if they do a direct EB-5 now, they can definitely do it in a TEA at the 500,000 level. We do not know if they will be able to do it at the 500,000 level when the regional center program is reauthorized. It's very possible that they will not. So it's not just saying regional center versus direct. It may be saying, you know, 500,000 versus 800,000, or versus a million, or versus a million eight. And so for a lot of people, it makes sense to proceed with a direct EB-5 now.
February. On February, the fight for reauthorization continued despite several delays in Congress.
And I can say also that speculation also continued with a few false starts. I know that we had a meeting arranged in Dubai, which we had to cancel because we thought February was the month.
Yeah, instead of flying to Dubai, I came right into New York because we thought there was a chance for new EB-5 legislation, which we thought would have been voted as early as February 18th.
Yeah, but March or April were more realistic dates, considering all that Congress had to do at that point, and the fact that negotiations kept on being postponed for the must-pass omnibus bill, which the bill was attached to.
That's right, Mona. And here's a clip when we explored that subject with Ron Clasco back in February.
It definitely is not going to be a standalone bill. They're not going to vote on EB-5 separately. It'll have to be attached to something, almost certainly to the continuing resolution. So the first question is, well, when will the continuing resolution be voted on? And right now, we're hoping it'll be February 18, but if you follow the U.S. government, you know that's very unpredictable. And they could extend that to April. They could extend that to June. There's no saying for sure when that's going to happen. So that's the first part of the question. Then the second part of the question, whenever it is it February or April, whenever it is, will it include EB-5? If I were a betting man, I would bet in favor of it. I think there's probably more than a 50% chance that it will. I'm not prepared to say there's a 90% chance that it will, but I think the chances are better that it will include EB-5.
Yeah, but Ron, I mean, this program brings in $5 to $7 billion a year. I don't see Congress skipping on it.
You've got to understand EB-5 is an immigration program. People in Congress want to do everything they possibly can to never have to touch or vote on an immigration issue.
Yeah.
For some, this might be their favorite immigration program, but it's still immigration.
March, 30 years in the making, and her name was Rhea.
Oh, gosh. So for Rhea, I'm sure everyone knows, but it's the EB-5 Reform and Integrity Act, which is also known as Rhea, which was signed into law in mid-March. So amongst new compliance and integrity measures, some of the key changes brought forth by the act included the reauthorization of the RC program. However, it did put an end to the direct pool projects.
It also increased the minimum investment amount to $800,000 for target employment areas, with $1,050,000 for non-target employment areas. There were new visa set-asides for rural, high unemployment, and infrastructure projects. And?
Well, I would say we're still trying to figure out the set-asides, but we could get into that later in the year. But it also provided the ability for investors who were in the U.S. to adjust their status and obtain conditional green cards without waiting years for the adjudication of the I-526 petition. So those are commonly known as the concurrent filings. So Mona, March really came in like a lion, but it did not leave like a lamb.
No, it didn't.
That's right. Yeah, we've got a few clips to highlight some of the drama we went through in March. This is from the episode, New Legislation on EB-5 is Finally Here. We even had Sam Udani on to help share some of his insights.
Now, finally, people understand that the law is going to change.
And of course, you're referring to the signing of the omnibus, right?
Well, Mark, there is a lot going to change. There are some things that are really exciting some folk. And of course, you're not going to make everybody happy, are you, Sam?
No. When you make the sausage in Washington, D.C., you know, there's always a product of compromise. And the sign of a good legislation is really that no one's happy with it. So that's par for the course.
Right. But here's a few things, though, just to whet your appetite. One of the big issues which surprised us all is the fact that pool direct petitions, which is what's been happening for the last 9 months, are now dead, outlawed completely. What else are we seeing in the new bill, Sam?
Well, the big news is that concurrent filing is available for those doing adjustment of status with the I-526 filing in the United States.
Well, what does that mean? What does that mean for people? Because we use these terms, but it's for the average person. What does that
mean? Well, what that means is that when you file your I-526 in the United States, and as a procedural matter, you can file your I-485, your I-765, and your I-131, which means that you'll be called for your biometrics within a short time, perhaps a month or two. After you file your I-526, they'll take your fingerprints and your eye prints. And then shortly thereafter, depending on how efficient USCIS is, you're going to get a EAD combo card, which means you're going to be able to travel back and forth between any country and the United States without a visa. And you're going to be able to work anywhere you want in the United States. And most importantly, you're going to have a status. And the status is adjustment applied for.
There's a lot of things in this bill which are going to make people unhappy. One of the big things is the fact that all of the agents or any third party person must register now. And I think, again, that's a great thing. It's a disclosure. And in addition, Sam, restrictive TEAs to remove half of the urban RCs. The new statute does change the minimum amount, raising it from $500,000 to $800,000 in a TEA and $1,050,000, only $250,000 more, not, so, you know, double the price as it was before. But I do see a lot of investors who find good projects, if they feel that they're good projects in an urban setting, they will pay. I think it's going to keep a lot of good projects still in the running.
All right, here we are, April. And there's one word that we have for April, which is blindsided.
Oh, gosh. So, USCIS's first listening session came out in April after the enactment of Rhea. Unfortunately, there was plenty of shock to the EB-5 community because USCIS announced that all RCs, including previously designated regional centers, must seek recertification.
That wasn't in the listening session, though, Rebecca. I think they just put that up on their website. And because we were at an IIUSA event and suddenly the website had this alert and there was nothing but shock.
You're right. God, yeah. It was a long time ago.
Right. So basically, our interpretation is that USCIS scrambled to interpret legislation and unilaterally decided the fate of the RC program.
And I do remember during that IUSA meeting, I know EB5 community was not having any of it.
Not at all. But we did start nicely. We started with requests of letters and asking for USCIS to reconsider.
Well, it may have started nicely, but after a silence, we started getting serious. And here's some clips from that episode, Sue the Bastards.
Bad news comes through, and USCIS repealed all the regional centers. So at this point, as we speak, there are no regional centers, so no I-526 can be filed under the regional center program at this time.
All the regional centers that were operating business as usual 2 weeks ago, now all of them, not just a significant portion, but all of them can no longer process 526 or them authorized until they're reauthorized.
Well, if you remember, Mark, the regional center program had lapsed. So they were coming in thinking, hey, we're coming back into business. We're going to get things done right away. And no, it's like you have to get recertified, even though these regional centers have filed previous I-924As, kept up with their certification in the past. Everyone has to go through this new process. And it's a whole new...
I do think that it's going to force USCIS to think about issues that they obviously do not consider, because USCIS is a body for immigration. They're not business related. And again, oh gosh, Mark, I don't know how many times we have been screaming about this, that the project part of VB5 should be with a different body. And I think this really, again, goes to prove it. But with the USCIS controlling this as it is, they're actually stemming the flow of billions of dollars coming into this country and perhaps future money coming in as well. I'm not litigious. I don't always advocate for lawsuits, but I think they're right. I think USCIS did need to be sort of told, and I'm sure USCIS ready for it as well.
Here we are, May. And in May, the scene started to set, because May began with notable congressional leaders, Jerry Nadler, Chuck Schumer, John Cornyn, and Lindsey Graham, releasing a joint letter which condemned USCIS for requiring all RCs to be redesignated. The main point of this, Rebecca, remember, is that no one could do anything. Even though the program was back, no one could go out and market.
And market.
Nobody could file.
You know, at least we had someone on our side, and we had several. And for them, they slammed USCIS for these unnecessary complications and requested guidance on the implementation of the program,
which USCIS ignored. And we have just one thing to say. The scene has officially been set for battle with USCIS over redesignation.
Sorry, Mona, with that little bit of foreshadowing, I had to do a desk drum roll. Here's a clip from John Pratt, where we talk about what was perceived as a legal error by USCIS.
There were a few congressmen that have said that the new law did not require all regional centers to basically be redesignated through a long, drawn-out process, because that creates certain tensions in the industry.
So by June, two lawsuits were instituted.
The first being the Bering Regional Center. And that was heard by Judge Chhabra, the federal Judge Chhabra. And of course, we had that famous line from him, quote, "The agency may have committed legal error by being way too quick to assume that the language of REA means that Congress requires us to treat the RCs as having been deauthorized."
So this felt like another, not win per se, but I guess it felt like someone else was on the regional center side.
And we have John Pratt back with us in these clips to help us explore those interpretations.
Maybe they're just not understanding why all the regional centers are upset about this. I think it comes down to two words, economic hardship.
The bottom line is this: if the lawsuit succeed that all regional centers that were not terminated are still designated, then immigration has to go through a process of terminating some of them, whether they want to continue or not. I don't know if that's enough basis under the old law, it was to terminate it because they were not pursuing economic interest anymore. So that could have an effect on all of the grandfather I-526 petitions that do no longer need an affiliation to be adjudicated. To me, they're both challenging the USCIS's website announcement that all regional centers were defunct. When they made that announcement, to my recollection, they had not expressed that grandfather investors may be okay if their money was properly used and the jobs were properly created.
Judge Chopp's asking a lot of the right questions, because all of this issue about pulling up about the fact that if USCIS are stating that the regional center program was defunct as of June of last year, then why were they still adjudicating through 829s
yes.
and asking for the filings on 924s? July. By the beginning of the month, following several hearings and the two lawsuits and lots of op-eds by us all, Judge Chhabra reversed USCIS's decision to deauthorize existing RCs.
Oh, what a day, Mona. What a day.
Every blog had one line. Regional centers are back in business.
Yes.
Right. And not to be undone, we did an episode with that exact same title. Here's a couple of clips from July.
When we read that decision, I know Rebecca and I were just, wow, this is an amazing decision by Judge Chhabra, and it had unusually detailed language. I thought that decision was so good that it really knocked out any chances of appeal.
It is, as you said, Mona, it's very unusual. The judge said, and this is an exact quote, the judge said, it's exceedingly likely, if not certain, that the plaintiff will prevail in this case. And that's way beyond what a judge needs to decide to grant a preliminary injunction. That's making it very clear that he thinks that this is an extremely strong case. And hopefully when he finally makes his final decision on summary judgment, it'll be consistent with that. This decision doesn't say the new law has no impact and regional centers can totally avoid the new law. It doesn't say that at all. It just says that Congress intended this new law to be effective, and all regional centers that were approved before are still approved.
All right, August. We're already at August. So at the end, at the tail end of August, was the tail end of this joint settlement agreement, which was reached between the coalition of the EB5 stakeholders. So they included all of the lawsuits with USCIS.
Yes. So within this, the settlement did affirm that previous existing RCs would stay designated, although they had to comply with the new measures set forth by RIA.
And of course, the USCIS was coming up with a new form that everyone, all regional centers, were expected to fill if they wanted to stay in business.
I think this became a nightmare, Mona. You know, we were thinking, the EB5 community regional centers were thinking of forms that we should be completing, and USCIS had a totally different picture in their head.
It did, but at the end of the day also, back in August, in the settlement negotiations, they'd also established quarterly meetings with USCIS, and there was a huge hope and a prayer that we would finally have communication.
And during this time, regional centers were out and about marketing. With the new set-asides as well in place, this left room for China to come back into the picture.
Right. I think that was another big headline. China is back. China really wasn't back because of their COVID restrictions. You really couldn't market in China. But the Chinese are filing, and have been filing this year, which we have not seen for such a long time.
Right, Mona. Here's a clip from August with Sam Hussein explaining where investors are coming from.
And most investors feel a lot more comfortable with regional centers because of all of the new securities laws and all of the new regulations which came under RIA.
Well, I think it was about time. There was a lot of changes and a lot of acts were coming in. And this really makes, you know, investors feel much more comfortable. And they really understand a bit more on the regional centers. And plus the investors, now that we get inquiry from, they're very smart. They really understand much more the whole structure of a regional center project, as well as outflows. So that's true, Mona. They're very,
the education. Projects. The education is definitely different. And of course, you know, we go through so much here before there's changes. I mean, getting this through Congress has taken 7 years. All right, here we go. September.
Well, had another bout of applications. The Visa Bulletin, published in September, revealed that Indian nationals were headed for another backlog once again, but beginning on October 1st. So what did this mean? Another rush filing. We had to get all applications out by September 30th for Indian nationals in order for them to take advantage of concurrent filing. But at least at that time, the set-asides remain current.
Well, the set-asides still are current as of the date of this podcast.
Yes.
We've had a lot of rush filings this year, right?
Oh, gosh. A flurry of it.
It's been a nightmare. I think if there's one thing I remember 2022 for, it's the word rush filing.
Right. I remember even myself was going through a bit of a crisis shock back in September. It seems like lately, every month, heck, every week, we're seeing some EB-5 related crisis. I almost missed the days when we started the show, gosh, 160 some, 70 some episodes ago. EB-5, this show is more informational, but now it seems like we're reacting to crisis to crisis to crisis. What's going on with this?
At that point, every client wanted to file an adjustment of status application.
Yeah, I can tell you that every law firm was inundated.
Yeah, our summer, I think, was taken over by adjustment of status filings.
After crisis, but
we have one more. We have one more.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Just a week ago, we were again trying to get this out on a podcast. It didn't happen in time. There is yet another litigation going on: wasted visas, wasted EB-5 visas by USCIS. All of this time during COVID and when they were shut down, they just didn't get round to all the petitioners. And there's about, do you remember how many thousands of visas, Rebecca, which are wasted?
Yeah, it was a tremendous amount of visas that are just sitting there and are not being used for EB-5. Unfortunately, they were being used incorrectly. On October 1st, India will again go into backlog. So there will only be two countries starting in October that will be in backlog, China and India. But I think it's also important to note it's going into backlog for the unreserved visa category.
The interesting thing also is that given this tumultuous world that we are living in, there's still such a demand for coming into the United States. That all never ceases to amaze me. Here we are, October 2022. Yet more forms, US from USCIS. They're just busy, busy, busy writing forms. We now have the E form, the G form, the H form, and now the K form for agents. But,
oh, gosh.
But no real guidance.
But we did get to hear from the IPO leadership. Many questions yet remained unanswered. But what was their usual answer? We were told to send follow-up inquiries to the lockbox.
Yeah, well, don't hold your breath.
Well, we certainly didn't hold our breath when we explored the topic. How do we handle agents under RIA?
We're not done. We're not done by any measure because there's so much confusion out there, basically because we lack guidance. But it's a lot deeper than that because so much of RIA has to do with events that have happened over the years.
We got agents forms, which you came in. And if you remember, one of our last podcasts, Mark, was with Jen from GT. Mm-hmm. When we talked about agent forms and when were we going to get them? Well, we got them. Yeah. We now got them.
I think they're draft forms.
Yes, they're draft forms. The bottom line is that agents will now have to definitely disclose all of their dealings with every project that they're working with. November was a month ago, and it feels like it was 6 months ago. But at least we had one positive thing which came out of November. USCIS implemented measures to tackle their slow adjudication times. Whoa!
Ooh, check them out.
Yeah,
with new filing guidelines. This is huge. This is huge for offices like ours, where we have filed reams and reams and reams of paperwork for one particular investor at a time. So these new measures by USCIS, guidance of how to do things online, of not having to spend forever hole punching and tabbing.
Wait, you're not tabbing the important stuff?
What, we still tab?
I was going to say, they still haven't gone into the era where we can actually send these applications electronically. But to help speed things along, they've given us some guidance on how we should be submitting these applications. So no need to binder clip anymore, no staples, these have all been discouraged because they said it will help process the applications faster. Yeah. However, this still has brought some of us kind of wary on sending the applications without at least the checks being stapled or smaller items because we're just so afraid it's going to get lost.
Yeah. Well, we've had a lot of history of USCIS losing things.
Right. Well, speaking of experiential history, Mona, here's a clip from an episode we did last month. Is a denial pattern emerging? Sounds like there's always a pattern with USCIS.
You know, John, we EB5 attorneys, we don't give up. So just because we've been thrown another challenge, which is now fight the AAO, I had in mind, and I know we have discussed this, is to go back to our friends on the Hill and request expedited processing for EB5 because we are in a different category from the rest of the immigration world.
No, I completely agree, Mona.
December. And December has only one word for me. Money, money, money. Existing RCs have been reeling at the cost of continuing to do business, Rebecca.
Yeah, this goes back to us on those forms, the G's and the H's and all of those forms that need to be refiled with the huge filing fees that come with it.
Right. But this has been an important month because, again, EB5 stakeholders have been writing. What do we do? There was a statement from USCIS that nobody would be denied if their regional center decided not to continue. However, the cost of continuing filing a 956 form at the prohibitive cost of $18,000, plus yes, doing the annual compliance at another $3,500, $4,000, plus mm-hmm. $20,000 for an integrity fee, we're talking about $50,000 in just U.S. government fees, has sent a lot of regional centers backward and saying, we don't want to continue. Do these regional centers do annual compliance as well or not? Do they possibly get annoyed for not doing annual compliance? And is that annoyed going to be a material change? All these questions are up in the air.
Yeah, especially for those who have investors, right? You don't want to leave your investors in limbo if something happens. And this is where, again, do you file? Do you spend the fees on it? What if USCIS comes out and changes their mind and says, look, for those who don't want to move forward, you don't have to proceed. What happens with the filing fee? What happens? No one knows.
As well as that, that's not the only thing which has been happening this month. This month started off with yet another piece of legislation causing a big stir that would eliminate country caps. This one was called the Eagle Act.
Our listeners, I think they've heard over the years of us talking about the Eagle Act, in which this is the third major bill that came out to seeking to eliminate country caps.
Of course, we're in opposition, just like we have always been, for the main reason that there were no safeguards for EB5 and that the EB5 market would lose its diversity and be dominated by just one country. And that's not what any of us want. Exactly. Well, luckily, every time this bill rears its head, more and more people are being educated. This particular time, there were major caucuses, the Black Caucus and the Hispanic Caucus both stood up in opposition. And the bill died before even votes were taken.
Yeah, but beware of the fourth resurrection. I mean, like you said, Mona, if more are getting educated, we may not see this resting in peace.
All right. So as we move to 2023, do you know what 2023 means for EB5 Investment Voice, Rebecca?
It means we're moving into our seventh year.
Wow. 7 years. Yeah. Mark? Yeah. 7 years.
Yeah, 7 years. That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah. So I would say we want to thank all our listeners out there who have been with us, and we hope that everyone continues.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Rebecca.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.